Okay. Okay, hi, it's Susie from MERP, and I'm here with Josh from Road to Jerusalem. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for having me tonight.
Hey, welcome home. You got home less than a week ago.
True.
What was the first thing you did when you got home?
Oh, my gosh. The first thing that I did was I got picked up by my brother John, and we went back over to his place, and we smoked a bunch of weed and drank some beers, and I told him a bunch of stories. But that was the first thing I did, and then I went to bed very early because I was jet-lagged and exhausted.
About 10 hours difference?
9 hours.
9 hours?
Yes.
And it's weed is illegal there and it's legal here,
yes.
So it was a great, joyful experience.
I got to tell you, I was happy to be home in Oregon, and, I'm really glad that we have such advanced laws, and I think that one day Denmark will come along.
Currently, you live 3 months in Denmark and then 3 months here in Oregon and then back again. Do you do that all year round?
Yes. Thus far, I have.
And so I imagine scheduling tours and things like that has to go around your schedule.
Precisely. And that's a real challenge. But the beautiful thing is that we always, depending on whatever challenge it is, we always just work with it. Because we know it's going to work out in the end. We have that confidence. So as much as it might seem like I go on holiday to Europe and then come back here or this, that, the other, I'm working all the time. If you want to be successful in life, you have to work.
So I know the story from my interview with Per in October on how you came to be in Road to Jerusalem. Can you just give us a version of how it happened?
Yes. So I rolled out of bed one morning and I had been tagged in a post on Facebook. And here I find Pim Olde Jensen is seeking a singer. He's scouring the globe for a singer. And I had been tagged in his post by a Portland guy, Don, we'll call him. And I got this message from him because he was really looking for the right singer. And I had done a little bit of research. I was like, hey, you're metal, like death metal, like from the Haunted. And I don't think I'm your guy. And he's like, no, we're doing something completely different. So I said, oh, well, that sounds interesting. This person's won a Grammy in 2006 in Sweden and a very successful musician, and it looked like a great opportunity. I said, well, what do you got? He says, no, what have you got? So I sent him a track that I was proud of that I had done in the recent months prior to this. And he got back in touch with me in 24 hours and says, yes, you're the singer from this band. This is the, we want you. And thus began a relationship that to this day is one of the most fulfilling musical relationships I've ever encountered. We spent a couple of years sending tracks back and forth. I would record here and, vocals here, and then they'd send me tracks. And what we found very quickly is that it was untenable. So what I ended up doing was flying over there, and we recorded an album over the course of a month. And it's been moving really fast and in a good direction. I've never been so happy in my entire life as a musician.
That's fantastic. So how nervous were you when you get off the plane and you have to go meet somebody from Hypocrisy, somebody from The Haunted and all that? Were you terrified to audition?
Not at all. No, I have this sense of confidence about me. I know I'm who I am. And so, no, I don't feel that way at all. On the contrary, I was very, very... I'm made to feel like an equal. There was no pretension in there. Nobody was sitting there starstruck of anybody else. And no, on the contrary, if anything, I went in there like I was the King Carrot. I'm Josh Tyree. I'm going to go in there and show you guys how to do it. So, no. No humility. I wish I did.
So after you recorded the tracks here back and forth, and then you went to Denmark to record the album, did you know you were in the band before you went?
Was it official?
Was it a hard decision at all?
No, not at all. I mean, there were some definite difficulties with the travel and the preparation that it took. And, I mean, to be honest, they had never met me. We had Skyped back and forth, and we had worked on music, and there was that brotherhood there. But honestly, there was a contingency plan whereby they would leave me in the practice space and send me back on the soonest plane if I turned out to be a flake. So, I mean, they let me know about it much later. There was no risk of that because I went in there, full on. But no, they were they were going to leave me in the practice space with like a sink and a toilet and, you know, put me on the next plane if that wasn't going to work out.
That is true. I mean, I suppose in your situation or dating, I mean, the same thing. You can know somebody a lot over the internet, even Skyping, but until you get in person, you don't really know.
Right. And I got to be honest with you, like the time spent together has proven everybody out. There's no red flags. It's just a great cohesive unit of everybody's, every oar is going in the water. And I'm really proud of that.
So the sacrifices you have to make here, I'm sure, you know, being 3 months here, 3 months there, 3 months here, 3 months there, job or career besides music, car, living quarters, things like that, that's got to be quite a juggle for you.
It is, it is. And, you know, a sacrifice, the definition of a sacrifice is that you give something up for something better. It's very, you know, it's very selfish to sacrifice, because when you sacrifice something for the better thing, you know, that's actually a very selfish thing. Believe me, I don't live any moment bemoaning my fate of going back and forth to Europe and working 3 months here and going over there and going on tour. It is a dream life. So I don't, I hardly consider it a sacrifice. It's an adjustment for sure.
You have supportive friends and family?
Absolutely, I do. And I have supportive friends and family in Denmark, in Sweden, in Germany, France, England, wherever. But, you know, America too. And I've got some great friends here in Portland, Oregon, and in the Oregon area, just who are willing to bend over backwards just because they see that I'm doing something. And I can't give them enough gratitude. Also in Denmark, there's a lot of wonderful people. I can't name them for, you know, security purposes, but they know who they are.
That's good. So currently there are two songs released.
That's right.
That you can find on YouTube or some other areas online. Under Your Skin and Beholden Now.
Yes.
I understand the rest of the album is done, or at least written?
It's done. The second album has been started.
What is the status of the first album, then, and of it being released?
Well, without overstepping my bounds, we have been signed by a Swedish record company. The official announcement is pending. They're going to release the first album, and then there's a second album as part of the contractual obligation with an option for a third. So when we worked with this company, we actually had the studio, the record company owner come to our show in Stockholm. And he just assured us that it would be no problem to release in March. We have a tour coming up in March, so it's going to coincide with our, hopefully coincide with the tour. The contract said 6 months, and then they had to release. The record company agreed to release in 3 months. So it takes 10 weeks for pressing, not to give you, you know, too much technical information. 10 weeks for the pressing. We're working on the album artwork and the lyric, you know, typing and all that fun stuff. I do it all handwritten, but now I got to type it all up. I got homework, you know. But it should be out in March.
So if things go well, March, the first album would come out. You're currently finalizing the second or writing the second?
We're working on the second album with one song in the can and like two more that are like bubbling. And I got to tell you, just as a side note, I couldn't be more in a state of regret that we weren't able to finish the two songs that we were working on, because they tool through my head now. And so, you know, it gives me something to anticipate for March. The best songwriters, the guys who just, you know, they just have great ideas and good grooves and great rhythms. And I just, yeah. The second album is going to be a piece of cake. We keep on getting better. I mean, I hate to sound like I'm so full of pride, but the band keeps getting better with every song. The sky's the limit. I couldn't be more proud.
I think you have a right to be proud.
Oh, well, we'll see.
So how come Andromeda Suffering from 2016 isn't available anymore online?
That was a prior recording. We actually went into the studio in 2017 and re-recorded it. And I got to say, it was way better quality when we did it together. The prior version of Andromeda Suffering had been recorded separately. I did it through the vocals in the States, and I really felt that they were, and everybody felt that they just didn't have the energy. I will tell you, when we re-recorded it in Denmark, I had a little hissy fit at one point and said, I don't even like this song anymore, I recorded it 6 times. And what Michael, the guitar player, said was, hey man, what do you want me to do? Get back in there with your bad attitude and sing the song again, okay? And I went in there and he's like, okay, once more, just for me because you love me. Okay, great. And what came out was a way better version. So the new version will be released with the album, and it's better than
the first album.
The first album, yes, absolutely.
So one of the two songs that we've heard, Beholden Now, is a very classy, jazzy song. How difficult is it to adjust your vocal, like, pattern to Pear's drumming? Because he has a very unique style of drumming.
Yes. Well, I got to tell you, it's not difficult at all. It's like falling off a log. It's naturally... I sing to him, and I think that's what he's overjoyed with, is that, you know, I have the timbre and the, you know, this, that, and the other. But what I'm really doing is I'm feeding in to where his rhythms are, because that's where the thought is. And it's very liberating. It's not any trouble for me to sing to his drum beats, because they are masterful.
That's one of the things, I think the thing for me personally that makes Road to Jerusalem so special is the fact that you have an interesting vocal pace or pattern that goes with Pear's, you know, pace. What to you makes Road to Jerusalem so special, if you had to identify one thing?
You know, it's the spirit. The spirit. Because there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of experience there. But what there really is it's the idea of the title of the band, of this struggle to get to our own place in life. And there's a real positive, driving, artistic spirit that keeps it going. And it's not just one thing. But if I had to go on one, it would have to be spirit.
So, Under Your Skin, I want to know, because that has, it's such an interesting song.
Thank you.
Was it more important to get the message across, or to rhyme or match up the lyrics so it worked well?
That's an excellent question. I gotta be honest with you. When I write lyrics, my thought is pure. I don't mess around. I'm not trying to contrive anything. So when I wrote the lyrics to Under Your Skin, I was sitting in the practice space, and we were having a little joint. And the smoke was drifting in a dusty room. I mean, they're musicians. They're not, you know, cleaning them in. So we had this dusty crate. I will be honest with you. We did clean it up. But it was dusty. And everything else, you know, there was fog lifting off of a rusty roof across from my apartment. So I write from the thought of reality. I talk about the truth. There is nothing in any of my lyrics that is trying to be a contrived rhyme. It needs to be the right idea. And I'm lucky if it rhymes. If it's not, I'll squeeze it in there and make it rhyme. But that Under Your Skin song was a real watershed moment for us, because when I came into the band, they had some songs prepared. A great deal of the songs on the albums were pre-prepared.
Lyrics?
Not the lyrics. I wrote all the lyrics. But the music, the drums, the guitar, and the bass were laid out. And I did a lot of homework. But I wrote to those songs. But when I got there, there was this inviting spirit to write new stuff. And Under Your Skin was one of the first songs that we wrote after we finished 7 out of the 10 songs for the album. And it was new, and we took it right to the studio, one of the best studios in the ARC Studios in Denmark, one of the best studios there. And we recorded that one in a day. And that one just had... that song... gets a lot of really good response from a wide demographic, and I'm really, really proud, because I feel like I had more of a hand in it, and it opened up a door so that now I always have a hand in everything, you know, it brought me not just to be the singer for the band, it helped me to be a co-conspirator. So yeah, nothing in that song is meant to rhyme. The fact that it rhymes is completely a mistake.
I was so curious.
It's a happy mistake.
I was so curious about what that song meant. That's great. That's
well,
great.
I mean, what does the song mean?
I think you explained it. I mean, I feel like...
I mean, it's right there. I mean, it's about getting inside somebody's head. Did you want to do it again? I mean, that's the idea. Mm-hmm.
When you were first just saying, you know, smoke drifting in a
dusty room.
In a dusty room. You know, you think about like Deep Purple and Smoke on the Water. They were looking out the window and you know, so I think that's great.
If you write from truth, and I would suggest this to any writer, write what you know. Don't make up stuff. You know, if you want to write Stephen King or fantasy or schmantasy, go ahead. Dragons, that's wonderful. But when it comes to characters and songs, write from what you know. You can never go wrong. But, you know, like I said, when I did Under Your Skin, I wrote the lyrics for that. It was actually for a song that we were working on that we scrapped. And then I needed those lyrics for Under Your Skin. It just worked out. I was very lucky. I'm very lucky to be in this project because every mistake I make turns into a great song.
So this might be a silly question, but you're used to the United States and Oregon. So you go over there and you record in Denmark. Are there any differences in recording processes or how people do things?
I gotta say, it's funny you say that. The recording process and the creative process in RTJ is unique to anything I've ever experienced over here. Over here, they like to get together, plug in their instruments, play as loud as they can, and maybe they come up with a song. Excuse me. Our creative process starts with the rhythm. We start off with a beat because Per will be working all day and he'll come home and he'll have a little puff, and all of a sudden he has something in his head. And we start with that. And then I either sing over it without any guitars, or the guitar player plays over it. Maybe we move on or try something different, but recording process over there was completely different animal. Completely different than over here. Over here, everybody just says, oh, let's write a song, complete it, then go in the studio and record it. No, that's not how we did it. We built songs in the studio. And that was really refreshing and difficult.
This question I feel like you kind of sort of answered already, but I'm going to do it anyway. Road to Jerusalem, there's a quote that expresses the idea of a long journey that's not necessarily intended as an actual travel, but an emotional one. Hare answered that question. What I want to know is, do you see all future lyrics kind of coming from that place? You don't see ever writing about dragons or things like that. Do you always see lyrics coming from that place?
I think dragons is a great idea for a song, and I would love to write a song about that. There are no limitations. And that's the best thing about this band, is that if it's a thought and a good idea, let's do it. As far as like the political or religious ramifications of the name, I can only just say that King of Jordan, said today that after Trump's announcement, that Jerusalem belongs to the Muslims and the Christians just as much as the Jews. And I am not a political or religious person at all. But the idea of what is your personal Jerusalem is really important. And it's a very controversial name that meets with a little bit of resistance, but it sticks in your head for sure. You know, it's unforgettable. And that's kind of what it takes. In today's music industry, you need to get some sort of attention. And we didn't want it to be a gimmick. The name, actually, we were going to change the name, and Anders Ludemark from Conqueror, you know Conqueror? So Anders, it was his studio where we were recording it, Starstruck Studios in Copenhagen, and Anders comes up there, and that guy, he's a really lovable guy, biggest voice you're ever going to want to hear. He's like, hey, you guys, don't change the name, it sticks in your head. And he has been nothing but very supportive for the band as well.
There's another band, not at all metal or rock, called The Road to Jerusalem. Have you seen that on YouTube?
No.
When you type it up, it's not any form of rock. I actually didn't listen to it, but...
Well, that's The Road to Jerusalem, yeah. And I wish them all the best.
So, are there any members of the band who are sticklers or perfectionists during the recording process and live, or just in the band in general?
Every single person in this band is a perfectionist. There's not one standout who wants to be loosey-goosey. There is no looseness in this band. Everybody's achieving at the top level because this is probably the best opportunity to really fulfill one's potential as a musician. So, no, there's nobody who's loose. They wouldn't be allowed in this band. If they wanted to be lazy, they should be in another band.
Is it true that Per manages Road to Jerusalem? Is he the main person that manages it and does the business side of it?
No.
What I wanted to find out is if you had to assign a position to each member in the band, like this one's the comedian, this one's the mediator, this one's the manager, can you do that?
No, because everybody changes hats all the time. You know, there are times when I really bring like this management energy and they're like, oh, good idea. And I always say, oh, let's just go on. Like, I get all the good ideas. Other times it's Per. Michael drives a lot of the financial side of things. Andreas brings like this pure ability and a levity, a lightness. So both all three of us, Michael, Per, and myself, tend to get a little on the dark side. When Andreas comes into the picture, it just brings this sense of humor and this real good energy there that sometimes we miss, you know? And no, everybody wears all the hats. Everybody works hard for management side. We have some management now, some organization. And, you know, all of us share all the responsibilities. There is no leader of the band. I will tell you that everything needs to go through a final filter, and that's Per Mollienzo. He's the one who, when we come up with a song, he'll be like, ugh, I liked it the first time when it was Led Zeppelin, cut it out. And then he'll come back with something, oh, this is great, okay? There's other times when Michael turns around after we've been working on something, he turns around and goes, okay, let's try a new idea. And I have to change what I'm doing. It's so great. It's really, it doesn't even faze me. It's just really, it's a pressure cooker for creativity.
But it sounds like it's also organic and not so structured. And I think that's why you still have love for it.
There's no structure. It's all immediate. That's the idea, is that we're trying to like write music from an immediate standpoint. Because if you're not now, like Beholden now, if you're not in the immediacy, then it's contrived. Then you're like
formula.
Trying to write a hit or a formula. We never sit down and go, oh man, let's write a hit. We just write a song. Hopefully people enjoy it.
It's been written, and even by me, that I hear influences such as Deep Purple and Gamma and Led Zeppelin. Do you find those comparisons complimentary or irritating?
Oh, I find them complimentary. You know, getting compared to Robert Plant is never going to hurt my feelings. In fact, the record company owner came up to me and he said, well, came up to the whole band and he goes, I listened to all your tracks once, and then I listened to them again, and then I showed them to some people, and he goes, I really hate Led Zeppelin, but I really like you guys. You guys are better than Zeppelin. And I said, oh, I hate Led Zeppelin too, but they sold a lot of albums. And he goes, that's true. You know, you don't argue with the owner of the record company. So I've received a lot of different comparisons. They never annoy me because people like to compare. That's how they put things in their perspective.
That's right. Your first live performance with Road to Jerusalem and your last one that you just did in Sweden.
Yeah.
The difference between the first and the last one, did you see any personal improvements?
Oh, God, yes. The first one was great. It was in front of a whole bunch of friends. I was in my comfort zone, but it was a very small stage. It was great. Sound was fantastic, but the small stage, and I didn't get a chance to kind of move around. And it was also our first time playing live in front of an audience. So you got to imagine that even for someone like me, the pressure was on. I was very glad that we had such a warm audience, and I stood in one place behind a microphone stand. After that, there was no mic stand. There was other obstacles to overcome. The last performance was really special. We came back to Copenhagen, you know, our home, and we had a really fantastic audience, a great room at Pumpehuset. P-U-M-P-E-S, who's it? You'll find it. Anyway, they were really easygoing people and great sound, and we just had a great time and a lot of fans in the audience. We get better every time we get together. There's some improvement. You know, we have all these times that we're apart from each other, so we have to make the time count. So, yeah.
So even though you obviously have a lot of confidence, and rightly so, with the band, do you find that, like your first performance, is that the one where you had a misstep? And
That misstep where I flumped down, I was really over-eager to, like, put that on Facebook because you got to put your pride out of the picture. It was the perfect debut for Europe. I have a sense of humor about myself. I killed it. The second show we had, which was opening the Algo Music Festival, that was really a rough show. People weren't expecting it. They were expecting metal, like, you know, standard metal. And we got on there, and they didn't even applaud after the first album. I think they were in awe, but they were very, very warm. But I had hecklers. I had never run across it because they weren't expecting RTJ music. They were expecting metal, like the what we would call today metal, maybe death metal or whatever. I mean, Invocator was going on later, you know, that night. And instantly, the first thing I did was like, well, I know this wasn't what you were expecting. And everybody warmed up. But there has been a lot of uncomfortable times. There's been mistakes. There's been, you know, it's live show. And you have to make these adjustments because every place is different. Last show, I unplugged my microphone and then plugged it back in. It all works out. It's been very rewarding. And the difference between the first show and the last show is that just more confidence and more compatibility on stage, where we just all just work together. We often say it doesn't matter where we play, as long as we're playing together, nothing can stop us. And that has proven true.
That's a healthy attitude. I imagine too, part of your thought process when if you get a heckler or something like that you can rise above, that has to come from maturity too. I had imagined a younger band that comes in and does that,
I've heard stories of guys jumping into the audience and stuff like that. I just didn't, you know, I'm a guest over there. I just wanted to warm people up to us. And what I figured out from the metal festival in Albor was that we were introducing ourselves. I think I brought this up earlier. We're introducing ourselves, that there was no reason to have any kind of attitude or bravado, and that if we welcome people in, and I got to tell you, it worked like gangbusters. Everybody warmed up because instead of being like all attitude, no one's ever seen me before. They're all sitting there going, oh, Paramalianza from the Haunted. You know, they're sitting there going, what's this new thing? And in shock. So it was my duty to kind of invite people in. And it was a process. It didn't happen overnight. You know, it's happened a lot faster than I thought it would, but the shows have gotten easier. I had never performed in front of a European audience, so I didn't know what to expect. I'm used to, like, playing for court. Yeah. And I know that I can put on my comedy routine. Turns out, same thing works in Europe. Lucky for me. But I was very nervous at first. Very nervous.
I think it's smart setting them up for success, saying, you know, this might not be what you expect, but we hope you enjoy it. I think that's brilliant.
I mean, yeah. And to answer your question the best way, is that I was very nervous at the first show and not nervous at all at the last show. I was just in heaven. It's a big responsibility what I'm doing. I got to be the best at what I do.
It's fantastic.
Gotta be the best me I can be.
Musically, I know from interviewing Pear that even though he played metal with the Haunted, he loves jazz.
He does.
What about you? What do you listen to for pleasure?
I listen to Baroque classical music, like Johann Sebastian Bach. I really like no vocals. I like the Baroque classical music. It helps me relax. My uncle is Glenn Moore. He's a bass player in a jazz band called Oregon, which plays, you know, all internationally. And played Woodstock in '69. And so I was brought up in like kind of a jazz atmosphere. And Glenn was really an integral part of me opening up as a lyricist and it's the sense of humor that you have to be a musician. So as far as jazz, I love all genres, but what I listen to mostly, classical music. I listen to Baroque classical. It's kind of silly.
And Road to Jerusalem is everybody's main project, yes?
Yes.
Do you journal or do poetry?
I don't.
So when it's time to write, then you sit down to write.
I write when it's time to write. Sometimes I have something, but sometimes I have something, and sometimes there's like this blank slate that needs to be filled. So I need to do more journaling. Thanks for asking that question. I need to do more journaling.
Everybody is a photographer nowadays with their cell phones and all that. Does it bother you when people sit there and take photos instead of paying attention? Do you look at them on social media? Are you concerned about them at all? No, of course.
I mean, social media is the currency of the current music industry. So, you know, I could sit there and be an idealist all I want, but the fact of the matter is Facebook likes are the currency of the music industry. So I'm never uncomfortable with having my picture taken. I'm just uncomfortable looking at my ugly mug because I'm a goofball. I look silly. But no, when people want to take my picture that's very fulfilling.
Do you put much stock in reviews, like reviews of shows or singles or things like that? Do you pay attention to them?
I haven't seen any yet, but everybody in the band takes very seriously how we're perceived and what is reviewed. We are strong enough to handle the bad reviews, but I can tell you, this band does get a little butthurt when there's one dislike and 500 likes and we get that one dislike, everybody's like out for blood. That's just because we're artists. You know, I wish I could say we're hard as stone and we don't care. We really deeply care about our fan base. They're our bread and butter.
And you're human.
And we want to be reviewed well. And I happen to know a couple of my favorite bands, like Queen, got really shitty reviews. Led Zeppelin got shitty reviews. I mean, but everybody loved him.
So being back home now, do you find that people treat you differently because you're in an international established band?
Yes. Yes, they do, and I'm very glad about that, and they should continue to do that.
From the outside looking in, it seems like you're living a dream. What is the biggest misconception you think people have about your current lifestyle?
Excellent question. People think that when I go on tour in Europe that I'm going on vacation, and what they don't know is that I'm going on a very expensive, exceedingly expensive work vacation. I'm working my ass off every single day. From the minute I wake up to the minute I go to sleep, I have demands being put on me, and I'm willing to do them because of the level of success that I've reached. But the idea is, oh, he's a rock star, he goes and plays. No, when I come back to the United States, I get a job. I just got a job today working at a restaurant. I cook, you know? I'm very proud of that fact. When I'm over there, I can't work. It's illegal. So I have to work my butt off and save up the money. So what people don't know is it's expensive and it's 24-hour day hard work. I know I make it look like it's effortless, but quite the contrary.
So if you're here now, that means you'll go back in the spring, March-ish?
Yes, yes.
Which means you'll come back home in the summertime. So that means summer festivals are out for our Road to Jerusalem now, unless they're in a different country, right? You could go to...
Switzerland or the United Kingdom, which would be out
Africa
of...
Africa.
It's called
whoever.
The Schengen, the European Union. Yeah, I could go to Africa,
okay.
Middle East, someplace like that. I'm scheduled to go back to for a tour early March. We're going to be supporting Orphan Land for a European tour. And then at that point, I'll either return home or there'll be more tours. But we're learning to navigate this whole idea of, because I'm an American citizen, 90 days out of 180 need to be spent out of the European Union. So we're just work with it. If we get done with the tour and... then we can just send me back.
Can't you do a same-sex marriage? Marry
I'm not
going to
marry a
pair?
Man. It's not that I don't like homosexuality. I'm just not marrying a man. I told everybody. I love the gays. I'm not marrying a man. You know, and I'm not going to marry a woman over there other than for love. You know, or money.
That's a very honest and true answer. I was somewhat kidding, but yes.
No, of course. You know, it's good that you kid, because that's been the running joke in the band. And Andreas Holma, of all people, told me, like, the second day I ever met him, he goes, "Nothing beats the gay joke, Josh." I mean, we do it all the time, so it's all good. But I ain't marrying no man.
What's the most common thing people say to you in Denmark or Sweden when they hear your American accent?
They say, "Where are you from?" And I tell them where I'm from, because they imagine that I'm either from Australia, United Kingdom, or United States. I tell them I'm from the United States, and they immediately tell me that Donald Trump is insane. But while you're at it, will he take care of North Korea for us? Which I thought was very telling, because Copenhagen and Denmark is very left-wing. It's a socialized country. They hate Trump. But as long as we got the crazy guy in there, can we handle North Korea? They would really make things better for everybody. So it's very interesting. But one thing they tell me about my accent is that I have a perfect Danish accent.
Previously, you had some fun with a Queen tribute band.
Sure.
When you come back home, does that get reinvigorated? Do you do anything with that?
No, and I'll tell you why. Because I had a dream where I met Queen when I was 16 years old. This was when I was 16. I had this dream that I met them, and Freddie was still alive. And I met the whole band, and Freddie was there, but he wouldn't talk to me. And finally, when he did, he's like, "Darling, why are you doing my thing? Why don't you do your thing?" Well, 20 years later, I did a Queen tribute band, and it was a lot of fun, and a really good accomplishment for me. But what it really came down to is that it really was more... He was right. Freddie was right. His advice was good. Do your thing. Don't do my thing. And so the idea of doing a Queen tribute band is anathema to me. I just don't... I don't see it happening. I think it would water down my brand. And only that. He's a great musician. He's done what he's done. Now I get to do my thing. And it's very rewarding. But I always remember Freddie. He's in me, you know, somewhere or another. There's a lot of energy of... from him.
Well, he talked to you in your dream when you were 16, so
yeah,
that's a pretty
right.
That's a pretty,
pretty
cool
amazing
relationship.
Dreams, yes.
I don't know if you'll answer this, but let's try. Any particular funny stories on your tour that you shouldn't talk about?
there's lots of funny stories on my tour that I shouldn't talk about, but I refuse to answer the question because I got to plead the fifth.
What about any bad problems, any terrible things that happened, like a flat tire? I don't mean terrible.
No. I got to be honest with you. There was nothing like that. There was some funny stuff. I'm not allowed to talk about it.
I'll turn off the recorder and find out.
I got to tell you, wherever we go, there's a good time. But no punctures, no flat tires, no trouble at the border, none of that stuff. But definitely an adventure. I can't talk about it.
I only have 5 more questions.
Okay, keep going.
So one of the things with Road to Jerusalem, because you guys are such great musicians and it does seem organic and it seems like you are doing something different and special, appearance-wise, when you guys go out to play, is there a lot of great effort to, we're all going to wear this, or this is what we're going to look like, or does it not matter?
So I get to be the costume promoter. I'm the one who like says, hey, this is what we're going to do for stage work. So it's what we try to do right now is we're not trying to be like Elton John or Queen or, you know, some bombastic show. One day we're going to get the holograms and all the crazy stuff. But up until then, what we try to do is I wear black leather pants and a black t-shirt. Andres is going to wear his blue jeans and a black top. Michael's going to wear his leather jacket and his whatever shirt and his black pants. And Pear's going to wear a black top and wear whatever's comfortable. The image is not as important as the music, but I feel like for the stage, just from my own personal experience, black can, you can't go wrong wearing black. It's slimming. If you sweat, you can't see the sweat rings. It's just great for metal. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the costume idea. I mean, one day we're going to all wear feathers and all that other stuff, but for right now, basic black, because you don't want to come off too, contrived. I'd love to be in a band where everybody dressed up like Gwar. However, I've got some really, really fantastic musicians, so we really try to let the music, and they do let the lead singer kind of handle the show, and that's really great because I've got a kind of a unique sound look. People always tell me I'm a lot taller when I'm up on stage than when they meet me, which is great. It's a great feeling, but no, all black.
So at this point, unless you know a band member like me, you see Road to Jerusalem live, you cannot get merch right now. You can't get it online, right?
Oh, know, no, not yet, not yet, coming. But it's coming soon. No, I'm so glad you reminded me. We are going to be making our merchandise available online shortly.
Very soon, okay.
You know, yes. And what we'd really like is when people come to the shows and get the merchandise. This was our first print or whatever, 100% cotton. But the idea is, if you want to be in a working band and you get signed by a record company, they invest money to press your album and distribute it. It's the onus is upon the artist to go out there and play the tours, sell the merch, sell the CD, because that's where we're going to derive a lot of profit. So, and that's keeping the business alive.
So what just happened was Josh handed me a Road to Jerusalem shirt, and
official
I'm quite happy
RTJ.
About it.
First pressing, there's never going to be another one like that.
Thank you very much.
You're very
much.
Welcome. I want to see you put it into a chick shirt. You say you're going to cut off the sleeves and make it hot? If anybody can do it, I know it'll be you.
So I want to recap quickly. We talked about news, any news that you wanted to report on. When will the full release be out? We talked about that.
Yep.
What is next for tour? Is there anything planned for the United States? I know you've got some dates in March.
Right. We've got dates in Europe in March, not in the States. However, obviously the States is like the pièce de résistance. It's the Holy Grail. And so we are currently in the works for East Coast. We're actually getting some support, hopefully, from one of the local bands here in Portland who've offered their support. Tours take time, they take a lot of money, but we'd like to do an East Coast and a West Coast. With this back and forth thing that everybody's doing, or that I'm doing, it would really be great to come in here and show. And I know that Portland has particularly got a special place in his heart. I know not for me, and that's okay, but for Pear and for what he's accomplished, I know that we would get a really great response here. And, so those are in the works. We're also working on an Australian tour. We're working on Japan right now. We're working on, more European tours. I just read today there's something coming up for Spain, Portugal. So, announcements to be announced.
Okay.
I'm excited. It's just going so fast, so well. I couldn't be more happy.
I'm so pleased for you.
I couldn't be pleased for myself. I've been working hard.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Oh.
Anything at all?
No.
No, thank you. But what a wonderful interview.
Cool. It has been a pleasure. I will be front and center when you play Portland.
Okay. Listen, we're getting even on the guest list. And there's going to be a lot of Portland peeps on the guest list, especially the hardworking people who are doing tributes, cover bands. Portland's going to get a free pass. We're just going to have one show in Portland where we're not going to take any money. We're just going to let everybody come who wants to come. Because Portland's been really supportive, and we've got a great musical community here. And, you know, you can like our Facebook page, because if we get 3 more likes, I get a gold Rolls Royce.
I think 3 more likes, but I will figure something out.
So, I mean, come on.
The last thing that I want to say is for fans to connect with Road to Jerusalem, you guys have a Facebook page. It's simply Road to Jerusalem Band.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and everybody should do that.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the first thing that's going to pop up if you do Road to Jerusalem. The second thing is going to have something to do with the land of Israel, but, you know, the first thing is going to be our band. And we really appreciate your likes, and, you know, come on. If you don't like it, don't like it. It only takes a second to click a like.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.